Why is it best not to be blessed in French?
What does it mean to be pregnant in German?
And why do Spanish people get constipated in the face?
We're discussing false friends, false cognates, and pseudo-anglicisms, which are fancy words for translation traps and double meanings across languages, on this episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I am Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Safaris, author of etymology books, including Useless Etymology. And today we are talking about some treacherous words, false friends.
Yeah, those words that in other languages make you think, oh, I think I know what that means, because it seems very similar to something in English. But actually, it isn't. Have I got that basically right?
When you're trying to learn a new language, you come across a word that looks really familiar. So you're like, sure, I know what that means. And then it stabs you in the back because it means something else entirely. So a false friend is a word in one language that has the same or a similar form. It looks similar, it sounds similar, but doesn't have the same meaning. And it can cause difficulty or confusion or awkwardness when you're learning a foreign language. And there's a little distinction here. We've got false friends and false cognates. Some false friends are also false cognates, and many are actual cognates. So cognates as a reminder.
So cognates is one of these words that linguistics people throw around expecting everyone else to know what it means. A cognate is a word that is related to that word, like as in it's got a common source with that word. An example is like the English magazine, which is, you know, a glossy booklet, and the French magasin, which is a shop. Those words don't mean the same thing, but they are related.
They're essentially from the same root, so they are sort of the same word, and they both imply things that have multiple things in them, much like also a weapon magazine. It was originally a word for a storehouse, I believe. And so in French, it became a word for a shop. In English, it became any place where it also a word for a storehouse, but then also a place where bullets are stored, or a place where articles are gathered, like in the Gentleman's Magazine, which was the first thing that was called a magazine as a periodical, and yeah, it was meant to sound manly.
But I'm going to really struggle here to differentiate between a false friend and a false cognate, because they sound like exactly the same thing to me.
It just means whether the words are related or not. So we might have a word that's in Malay that looks like a word in English, but they're from completely different linguistic sources. So you could be false friends and false cognates, or you can just be false friends.
Okay, but you can't be a false cognate but not a false friend.
Yeah, right.
Okay, good. Let's kick off with some false friends. Let's get stuck into it.
So a really good example of this, I would say, is this is a false friend, not a false cognate, because they are related. The word empathy in modern Greek has a corresponding empatheia. It's basically the same word etymologically. It's the element in that means in, and then the element pathos, which means feeling. But in English, that means understanding someone at an emotional level, feeling their feelings. In modern Greek, it means malice or malevolence.
Oh.
It's like feeling negative feelings, strong negative feelings and prejudice against someone. So you can see that could be a problem if you're trying to express empathy in modern Greek.
There's something else going on also with sympathy across European languages. For example, the French sympathique and the German sympathisch do not mean the same as sympathetic, even though they do have the same source. They just mean sort of nice. You know, something that's nice, which is fine. I mean, being sympathetic is nice, but it's much more specific in English. It's a much more specific way of being nice, is being sympathetic.
Sort of the other way around, the English word casino has a very specific meaning. You can imagine a casino in English very easily. It's got glitzy lights, it's got gambling. But in Italian, it has a lot of different meanings. It can be a word for a brothel. It can be a word for a mess. It can be a word for a noisy situation, or it can stand in for like a crap load of something.
Okay, so this is like another phenomenon, isn't it? Where something is much more broad in the source language than we're using it for. Chef is a really good example.
Yeah.
Chef is just a head cook in English, but it's literally related to chief. In fact, chief represents just a borrowing of the word chef just a bit earlier on, and it just means a boss. So actually, at the head of a kitchen is a chef de cuisine in French. You need to be specific if you're talking about a chef in French. A chef of what?
But our chef is just all about food.
It won't surprise you that I have got quite a lot of French ones. For anyone who doesn't know, I married a French lady. I had to learn French to speak to her family.
That
so
helps.
I've come across an awful lot of these. I've tried to categorize them. Maybe we start with some of the ones that, because of what you were saying about empathy, some of the ones that sound good, but are actually quite bad things in French.
Yeah, I would like that.
Mm-hmm. So a good one is sensible, which is spelt exactly the same as sensible.
Sensible.
And it is the source of our word sensible. However, in French, it means sensitive.
Oh.
So if you were to say l'homme est sensible, what you're saying is, oh, this man is really sensible. That's what you might think. But no, what you're saying is this man is sensitive. So they might not be being quite as pleasant about you. I think if they were going to say sensible, they would say raisonnable, which is reasonable. And also our source of the word reasonable. Caractère as well in French. To have caractère is not to, you know, have a great character. It's to have a terrible temper.
So, again, is it because you're like acting up?
Yeah. I mean, so this is the thing, right? It's distinctive behavior is where it comes from. Because what has happened, obviously, with English is it has borrowed a huge number of French words, huge number. And often the meaning has then changed in English away from that French meaning. For example, we've taken the word on and we've forced it into a niche, which is what we did with chef. But so we already had the word ask when the French came over, you know, when William the Conqueror took control and we were being run by French people in England. So when we get their word for ask, which is demander, we make it very specific. We make it asking with force instead, even though in French, demander is literally just asking, and commander as well. We're making these sort of very niche words fit very sort of specific uses. Commander is, so for example, if you order food in France, you commander la nourriture, you command it. But I mean, you're not actually literally ordering the servant to go into the kitchen and make it for you.
To be fair, we also order food, which in another context could sound like giving orders.
You're absolutely right. So this is clearly a familiar way for the meanings of these kinds of words to change. But I did come across while I was researching an instance where English, modern English, is more French than modern French.
Oh, tell me.
What I mean by this is that the English use of the word is truer to the French use of the word in Old French than the modern use of the word. And the word is deceive.
Ooh.
Yeah. So the French equivalent of it is decevoir. As in, we say receive, they say recevoir. We say conceive, they say concevoir. And for deceive, they say decevoir. But anyone who speaks French will know that decevoir means to disappoint, not to cheat or to, you know, hoodwink. But the English meaning is actually truer to both the Latin and the old French meaning of that. The modern French meaning of being disappointed is based on the idea that your expectations haven't been met and you therefore feel deceived.
Oh.
Because someone got your hopes up. And therefore you are disappointed. So that's English being more French than French.
It's a little bit true of the word petulant in English versus pétulant in French, because the root of petulant means to attack or to strive after or to beg. And it's just bad behavior more than French, which my understanding is it means more like playful, right?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I've never used it.
Oh, okay, great.
I barely used it in English. It's quite sort of high level, isn't it? Petulant. They don't get the opportunity to use it often.
Petulant means like irritable or peevish in modern English, though in English it originally meant the same thing as it did in like 15th century French, which meant like immodest or wanton or saucy, which means you're being like forward, which then sort of evolved into insolence, which is
right.
the modern sense of the English word petulant. So it pejorated in English and it ameliorated in French.
Can I mention a few more French ones that we've taken from French but have changed meaning in English?
I've got a couple too. Let's do it.
Okay, these are great. So we've taken these, you know, the best part of 1,000 years ago. And they've diverged quite a long way. For example, our word travel is from the French word travail.
Travail.
Indeed, our word travail is also from the French word travail. Travel is just a variant on the English word travail, right? But sometimes a specific variant takes on a specific meaning, or just a specific spelling of the word takes on a specific meaning. But that travail, travailler in French means to work. People who know French will know that, not to move around, right? So when we say travel, we're basically implying quite a rough journey, one that's a bit of a slog. But even then, I'm using another false friend, which is journey, which is based on the French journée. Now, if you come across journée in French, you're not dealing with travel of any sort. You're dealing simply with the word for day.
Huh.
But our word journey implies a day's travel.
That's also another fun linguistic term, if you want to have one on hand. That means travail and travel are etymological doublets because they came from the same place but ended up with different meanings in English.
There we go. Come across a few of those, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, here's another one. I was surprised to find, because I'd spent a lot of time assuming this was the case. So rester, R-E-S-T-E-R, in French, means not to rest, but to stay.
Ooh.
And I was thinking, oh, but our word rest probably comes from that, right? If you stay somewhere, you're kind of just, you're resting in the same place. But that's not true. Our word rest in that sense is, it's just Germanic through and through. It's just a word meaning to repose. Repose being another French word, by the way. In fact, the French for to rest is reposer. But our word for when we say, and the rest, as in, except for the things we're talking about, the rest, that does come from French, rester, because it is the stuff that stays. It is the stuff that remains is what's left, the rest.
Another interesting doublet that came from a French false friend is rappel, which means in French, I believe it's a word for a reminder. And it is also our word for rappelling down a mountain. It literally means to recall.
Oh.
And it's a doublet with the word repeal as well, which is also from the same source.
Oh, that's a really good one. That is.
Like, there's so much here. It makes the brain buzz.
If you drive through France, you'll know that word because it's written underneath speed limit signs when it's not the first time they've told you the speed limit. So if it's a repeater sign.
Oh, that feels a little passive aggressive. in case you didn't notice the first time.
It is like that. Because in England, I don't know how you do it in the States. In England, we just make the second and third signs. They're just much smaller than the first one. So you already know that it's a repeater sign because it's smaller.
All ours are just all the same size.
And yeah, I suppose it doesn't matter, does it? Like, it either is the speed limit or it isn't. It doesn't matter how long it's been the speed limit. One to watch out for, by the way, is French blessé, B-L-E-S-S-E with an accent on it, does not mean blessed. It means injured.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but they do share the same root because the idea of being blessed in English is essentially having been struck with a holy blessing. To be blessed is literally being struck by God or I don't know if it's by God or by some sort of holy force.
Or by a Southern lady who's telling you, bless your heart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, as long as she's not got a knife in her hand, then you can feel safe. But
oh, no, you shouldn't. If a Southern lady says, bless your heart, she is she's being very judgmental.
Is it patronizing?
It's very much.
I've got a few to watch out for when you're on holiday, if you happen to be going to a French-speaking country. You need to be aware that the word location, which is spelled exactly the same as location, does not mean a location. It means a rental. So,
oh, okay.
Location de voiture is where you rent your car. It is not where you're going to find your car.
Is that just like an extended sense of that same notion? It looks like it's just like a usage of a place. Kind of a figurative extension for the French context.
It has to be, doesn't it? Because it'll be from locus. It'll be from Latin, just for place, right? Librairie in French, not a library. Do not walk out with a book without paying for it from a French librairie. Although we all know, if we've done any French at all, that a French library is called a bibliothèque. Ooh, la bibliothèque.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so be careful with that one. If you're in a restaurant, And at the end, you want, I don't know, you've paid the bill and you want a receipt. Do not ask for la recette, because what you're going to end up with is the recipe for whatever it is you ate.
I mean, that might be nice to have on hand. That's true. A little confusing, but I, you know, it's really good.
And if the food really doesn't agree with you, don't ask for le médecin if what you want is medicine. That's medicine.
That's the doctor, right?
It is the doctor, right. But also don't ask for le docteur, because you might end up with someone with a PhD that is not going to help you in a medical emergency.
Also true in the state, in English.
There are also a few that are words that are rude in one direction or the other. For example, the French... So this is one that my wife told me. She says it's really funny when she sees this on signs in England. Say it'll be a sign for an Irish pub and it'll say a bite from Ireland. Bite, B-I-T-E, in French is pronounced beat. And I mean, it means penis. So French people find it very, very funny when they see a sign that says a beat from Ireland. that accent wasn't offensive, was it? Nah, it's fine.
On that note, this is much gentler, but a crayon in French is not the same as a crayon in English, for example.
Crayon is a pencil, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then pencil, Danish, Swedish, and Norwegian have a similar word, or basically a cognate with the meaning paintbrush instead. And penicillin is called because it looks like a paintbrush, not a pencil. The Latin word that these come from means tail, like a brushy little tail, or a penis. So there's that.
While we're chuckling at mildly rude things, although I've got a load more rude ones from other languages to do a bit later. Bras, B-R-A-S, but pronounced basically bra in French, is your arms, not your bra. But there is a link, because the English brassiere, is from the French for arm thing.
Thing right? You put your arms into.
Yeah, exactly. It does invoke the word arms. But actually, in French, a brassiere, not brassiere, that's something else, that's a brazier. A brassiere is a sports bra or a bra that doesn't have wiring in it. So they do use that word for something a bit similar. But what they call a bra in French is a soutien-gorge, which is another euphemism, because the brassiere is a euphemism, really, if you're calling it an arm thing, isn't it? You're kind of skirting around what it's actually concentrating on. Soutien-gorge means a throat support.
Yeah, that would make sense. Just, like, yeah, gorgeous is having support. A long, slender neck.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Literally.
Neck support. That's a better way of putting it. And then there's some obvious ones, like, in French, pain is very good insofar that it is pain.
Pain.
Their bread is superb. And a coin, spelled C-O-I-N, is a corner. It is not a coin. A coin is a pièce, but a piece is a morceau, which is a morsel.
Another edible one. We use this in English as well with the French sense, but they're doublets. The word champignon for mushroom is a doublet of champion. The notion of both is the word field, essentially. It means that if you're a champion, you are a combatant in the field. You're a gladiator or a fighter originally. And if it's a mushroom, it grows in the fields.
There is a potential third doublet. So does that make it a triplet?
Campaign as well.
Oh, okay. So we've got a quadruplet then. Because champagne as well.
Yeah.
The region may well be
named after the fields.
Named after the fields, yeah.
Yeah. A couple that appear across romance languages in general would probably be, this is a subtle difference, but words like conductor and control just have different notions in English a little bit. Like conductor tends to be associated with, I mean, you also have musical conductors that reflect the same senses in Spanish and French, but it means often is associated with trains in English, the train conductor. And then control is a little, it's fiercer in English, control, whereas it's just like checking and examining. But we also have that sense in like mission control, yeah, and things like that in English.
So conductor is a driver, isn't it, in most European languages, and control is it's to check, controle. Actually, this reminds me of something really interesting. I mean, it was more pertinent when Britain was still in the EU, although Ireland is still in there, Malta, Is Malta in the EU? Well, anyway, Ireland is the representative of the English language in the EU these days. But there's something called Euro English that's particularly relevant in Brussels, the seat of the European Union, along with Strasbourg. And this is the English that Europeans speak together when there are no native English speakers in the room. In fact, there's been research that suggests that as soon as a British person walks into a discussion between Europeans speaking English, general comprehension drops because the native speaker comes in and starts using words in a different way to the people who are using them. This Euro-English, it features usages of words that everyone else understands as being correct, but a native English speaker would not.
Ooh.
A really good one is control is one of the ones, right? They'll use control to mean, you know, we need to control that. We'll mean we need to check it, not that we need to, you know, take control of it. But others are like actual. So in most European languages, well, I say most, the ones I know anyway, actual doesn't mean like in real or existing like it does in English. It means current. So actuellement in French, actuel in German, these mean currently. In discussions between Europeans, European language speakers, they will use actual to mean currently rather than to mean, you know, real or really. Links to that, realize as well. I mean, we'll occasionally use realize to realize a dream is to make it happen. But we use realize, you know, when something occurs to us, but that doesn't happen in Euro English. It gets used to mean making something occur. And eventually is another really good one. Eventually in English obviously means, you know, it'll happen down the road at some point. In German, you might say endlich. French, you might say finalement. But eventually gets used in Euro-English to mean possibly, because eventuel, eventuellement, these words mean possibly instead. So they're English words being used with meanings from other languages. But everyone understands it because in their native language, it's the same as it is in the other person's native language, even though those native languages aren't necessarily the same.
I don't know if this would qualify, but you can tell me whether this falls under the same category. But the word cult in English has a particular negative connotation, but it's basically just means worship in most European languages. I don't know if that would qualify. I guess it's a little less conversational. I don't know how frequently it comes up, but any variation on the word cult in like French or Polish or Spanish, my understanding just means worship. A lieu de culte is a house of worship.
I wonder if that's more closely related in meaning to culture than we use it then.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I know all of them are from a root meaning to till or to cultivate.
Oh, that's a good one, Jess.
We turned cult into a pejorative, basically.
Right.
Or people who behaved in a cult-like way turned it into a pejorative.
Yeah, it's not our fault. the cults will end up going wrong. Mm. Although, I mean, the ones that don't, they just become religions, don't they?
Another fun one in Danish, Dutch, Norwegian, Swedish, and German, the word bad means bath typically, or the word B-A-D typically means bath. And it's even in German, it's there are particular towns that qualify as like bath towns and things. And you have to meet a certain standard, my understanding is, to be called a bath town. And that probably, you know, dates back to Roman times and bathhouses and things like that. But the English word bad is not related to any of these words. It has some drama around it. It doesn't have relatives in other languages. It might have a predecessor in Old English that's the derogatory term badl, which was used for effeminate men sometimes, and it may be related to a word meaning to defile, but it wasn't the standard word for bad in Old English. Old English instead used words related to evil for bad as the antithesis of good. And we still, of course, use that good and evil, but good and bad in terms of quality didn't come around really until, say, the Middle English, 1300s or 1400s.
I think Old English also used words related to baleful as well. But that, I love that. So bad is a proper English word. I love it when we find one of these.
That is a false cognate.
Yeah.
For example. So they're not related.
It's false cognate with bath in all of these. But bath is a true cognate of all those other bads. You find it with a lot of Germanic languages. If they're using a D, English is using a th for the rest of them, except Icelandic. And maybe Faroese don't like that th. sound very much. Oh, here's a related one, if I may, from German. Obviously, I've also got quite a lot of German ones because I am speaking to you from Germany. Not in German, not. It means emergency. It does not mean not. Now, this, you know, is something you could maybe survive without knowing. Maybe. But if you ever were caught up in an emergency and you were looking for, say, the exit during a fire, and what you saw on the sign was not Ausgang. And if you heard only a small amount of German and knew that Ausgang was exit, but didn't know that not meant emergency, you might very well turn away from that door thinking it was not the Ausgang rather than it was the emergency exit. That one strikes me every time I'm on the subway in Germany.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I had family in Germany for a little while, and the big joke among my Southern American family members was, where in the hell is Ausfahrt Germany? Because it's on all of the exits.
The fact that you do have a multitude of different farts in German is endlessly hilarious. Fart just means, you know, a journey or a way or something like that. It's from the verb fahren, which means to go or to drive, actually, because you've got gehen, which is go. I'm getting too deep into it. fart. I'm wondering if there are any relatives of fart in English, any, you know, if there are any genuine cognates. Fast as well. You have to watch out for fast as well in German, because fast doesn't mean speedy.
Does it mean like something stuck, or is it closer to that sense of fast?
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It does. So we do have that meaning in English. It means tight. You know, or almost as well. If you've done something fast, it means you've almost done it, not you've done it quickly.
Ah, so, interesting.
Watch out if a German says that they've done something fast. It doesn't mean they've done it slept. It means they haven't done it.
That's also ultimately the logic behind fast as a word for speedy too. The idea is that you're like sticking to an intense pace.
Yeah. That's one of the ideas behind it. It was in a video I recently did about contronyms. Right, because, you know, you can be stuck fast, which means you're not going anywhere, or you can be moving fast, which means you're going somewhere very fast, very quickly. Very quickly. Indeed.
I have another phenomenon that's related to false friends. These are false friends, but they're a different sort. They're pseudo-anglicisms. And this is when a word in another language uses an English-looking word to mean something that English speakers wouldn't recognize. And so, for example, a handy in German is a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And it's artificial pseudo-English and the German hand, but allegedly many Germans think that the word is an English term for a cell phone when it is very much not. Apparently, Indonesian and Korean also have hand phone or variations on that word.
We don't have a noun handy, do we? We just have an adjective handy. Someone is handy.
Well,
so is there a thing? We do. Oh no! Oh, that is one of my worst moments on this podcast. That was one of the worst ones. Just had to take a glance at your face and realize where I was going. It's like, cycle through the Rolodex of wit, disgusting acts. Oh, it's that. Not disgusting, natural.
I thought we were on the same page. Oh. Ooh, that was funny.
I've got more of the German ones for you.
Okay.
You know, do you know what they call, so in the 90s, there was a style of backpack that was really fashionable, where it was just a single strap over the arm. We had them at my school. Everyone was wearing them, but people stopped wearing them because other kids used to go up and just sort of undo the bit of Velcro and your bag would fall on the floor and everything would break. They call that in German a body pack.
That's horrible. I love it. It is, yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, we call them like crossbody bags sometimes when they're being sold in shops and things. But
bum
it's
bag?
Just so it's so funny because it has such a different meaning.
Yeah.
In English as well.
Although, yeah, bum bag and fanny pack are also pretty funny. And the word that we use for a backpack, a rucksack, is obviously a bit of German. That is literally German for backpack, rucksack. is back.
I wonder what the German word for like a medical or a crime body bag is.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah. Körper.
It's probably some elaborate compound word.
Yeah, basically, that's not Körpertaschen.
Leichensack.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like lich sack.
Yeah, it's a dead body bag. That's very awesome. Good. That is really good. I like that a lot. That's better than body bag. Going home in a body bag. I'm not sure I'd fit.
These are Germanic words, right? Body is a Germanic word and bag is a Germanic word. So it is interesting.
Actually, body is one of those ones that we've talked about this though, haven't we? Body doesn't exist in other Germanic languages, except for it's probably, it might be like a dialect term in a regional bit of Germany, but body, like we say, everyone else is using words like Körper, related to corpse, or words related to lich, or words related to live as well, like Leib is another Germanic word for body, but they're not using body, so they've got space for it in the language. Another one you've got to watch out for as well, if you go to a photography session or a filming session,
a shooting,
it's called,
oh no,
a shooting. So if you go for like a family portrait, you're in danger of attending a mass shooting. So watch out for that one. Oh, but my favorite one is what Germans call a vintage car, which is an old timer. And they do this blissfully unaware of the, you know, the actual English meaning of this.
My understanding is that German also has mobbing as a word for bullying and flipper as a word for a pinball machine.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole theme park, essentially, on the edge of Berlin dedicated to flipper machines, to pinball machines. Yeah, you just go there and all you do is play pinball. I haven't been.
I understand why it's called pinball, because you start by shooting it with the pin. But I think flipper is more pertinent to how you play the game.
One that I've heard English speakers adopt here, I don't know why. Maybe because it's more pithy than our word for it. But they describe a projector as a beamer.
Oh, interesting.
So something that beams an image onto a wall, basically. They call it a beamer. Although I don't know if this is the same in American slang, but in British slang, beamer is a German car.
It's a BMW. BMW, yeah.
A beamer, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. The French call it a BM. BM. Like, well, why miss off the last letter? You know,
just go, that has a different bit of slang. Yes. In English.
Yeah, it does. Again, I think that's American slang. I only know it from Family Guy, I think. Is it yourself or something?
I mean, it that yourself in particular. It just means bowel movement. Yeah. Okay. I don't think it specifies where. Oh, this is great.
That tells you something about Family Guy, all right? Not me.
I read, and I'm going to need someone who speaks Dutch to confirm this, but I read that coffee shop means a cannabis dispensary in Dutch.
Oh, yeah, that's just a fact. That's absolutely true.
Oh, that's awesome.
If you go to Amsterdam and you go to see the coffee shops, someone is not going to go and have coffee. They're going to have cannabis. I mean, we call them, you know, Dutch cannabis shops in English as well. That's 100% true.
I guess there is a degree of similarity between the smell of coffee and cannabis.
And you can usually get coffee there, but it's not the reason that anyone's there.
You get coffee at a weed dispensary?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I never would have guessed that.
Here's something that you mentioned, pregnant, German pregnant. It does not mean pregnant.
It doesn't mean pregnant. It means like evident or informative. Is that right?
It's more like, I would define it's more like brief or pithy.
Pithy. Okay, that makes sense. So in Romanian, it means evident or marked or manifest. In Swedish, it can actually mean pregnant, but it can mean striking or distinctive. And in Dutch, it can mean like poignant or meaningful. And all of these are from the same, like when we say a pregnant pause, we mean the same thing, but all of them are from the Latin word that actually means pregnant with a baby.
So something that is pregnant with something is just kind of filled with it?
It's much more figurative in these other languages than it is in English, where it is more literal. Though in English, there were also, this is a Latin derived word, obviously, it means like
before birth. But in Old English, the words were like mid berne, meaning with child, or berneke, meaning child adding or child increasing, or increasing with child, probably. In the 1800s, you could also say that someone was poisoned. So there we go. We've come full circle with our gifts.
Okay, for me, you buried the lead there. So pregnant is pre-birth. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. And so it could be the pre-birth of an idea, or it could be, you know, pre-birth of something else. It's something that's about to produce something.
Yes.
Got it. Not something that is full of something, like I said. I suppose it's full of it with the intention of at some point releasing it.
I understood your logic there. Another fun one that I believe is different in pretty much every European language is smoking means a dinner jacket, which is cool.
Yeah, a smoking jacket. So it's not exactly the same as a dinner jacket, right? It's one of those with the sort of lapels, the sort of shiny lapels or whatever
like a tuxedo.
I suppose you're right, actually. Yeah,
tuxedo is named for Tuxedo, New York, which isn't very far from me. It's very wealthy.
Right, is that why it's named after it? Is what they wear there?
Yes.
I see. Because I think we still call it a dinner jacket in British English more sort of formally. Even though a dinner jacket does not have to be just the jacket. Like the full setup is called a dinner jacket, which is stupid, but true.
It took me forever when I was a kid reading historic novels and things when people would say dressing gown. That didn't, like, I couldn't picture anything other than a frilly nightgown when I read that word. So we've got like Ebenezer Scrooge in his dressing gown. And I was like,
terribly cold. We've been dabbling in Spanish, haven't we, the pair of us?
We have, yeah.
I looked up a couple of, one of these came up the other day when I was out with my camera operator. Very smart German man who also is fluent in Spanish, and his English is immaculate. But he did use a word that I wasn't expecting, which was when we were filming and some people got in the shot and started messing around, which happens a lot. He said that he wished they weren't molesting us.
Oh, yeah. No me molestar just means like, don't stop bothering me, right?
Yeah. So he'd used the Spanish meaning. This German man had used the Spanish meaning in English of molestar, which is just bothering someone, just to molest them. So, you know, again, ultimately the meaning in English comes from that, but it's
been extended.
It's pejorated for sure, is even further. It wasn't great to start with. And also constipado in Spanish is not to be constipated in your bottom. It's to be constipated in your nose. It's to be bummed up. It's to have a cold. Watch out for that.
I mean, same notion. I think it's neat that a lot of these have an English-looking ing on the end, and that gets tacked onto other activities. So this is a Spanish word with the English-looking ing ending on it. The word for bungee jumping is puenting, which means puente is bridge. So it's bridging.
I think I must have mentioned this before, but I do have a least favorite French word. And it's because it looks like an English word. It is not one. It's footing.
Yeah, that's in other languages too. Doesn't it just mean running?
Yeah, well, it does. Yeah, jogging.
I guess we use like hoofing.
There's a difference between running, you know, courir, and footing. On fait le footing. They say like that. And oh, you'll understand that, won't you, Rob? Like, no, it's not a word. Stop it. And they also use, here's a really interesting one, because we've got a nice boomeranging going on here. In French, they refer to celebrities as les people, but we get our word people from French in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's gone from them to English meaning people, and then they've gone, I guess, because a lot of celebrities are Americans, so they take the American word for it.
I really like the French word for a makeover, though. Re-looking.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. I don't know why I really hate these. I think it's because of the way. I'm not saying this within earshot of my friend, my wife. I don't like the way that French, whenever it takes on a word, deliberately puts a French way of saying it onto it. I find that really annoying. I mean, in English, we do a terrible job of attempting to pronounce it the way that it is from the source language, but French never does that. So you get footing, you get, there's this TV show that's very popular in France. I don't know if it's still running, called Les Reines de Shopping, which is the queens of shopping. They go out shopping and then they French people are very good at being bitchy. So what they do is they go out, they shop, they buy outfits, and then the other women tell them how awful they look. Shopping. And I don't know. There we go. I shouldn't have said that. I've just insulted all of France. I love French. I think it's a very beautiful language, but I do not like the way that it makes every word seem like it's French.
I saw some from Italian. I like that the joker in a deck of cards is sometimes called a jolly. I don't understand. Oh, a spa is called a beauty farm, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, they talk about wellness here as being sort of general well-being, we might say. So you go to, if you went to like a wellness spa.
Wellness spa. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we use that in English, do we? Do we say wellness spa?
I have seen terms it that, before.
Yeah, I feel like wellness is actually a word that we are sort of using these days. But I think there was a time when it wasn't really. And wellness was quite an unusual use of the term in German. Another good one of those is home office as well, which during the pandemic became a big thing. Home office is working in home office means working from home. Whereas in England, the home office is our interior ministry. what would it be, the State Department, maybe? No, is that your foreign affairs? What's the American, like, home affairs? Or is that just
home?
That's just the president?
I don't know. I don't know which department would be the Department of the Interior or something like that.
Interior, yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you have a Department of the Interior? Yeah, it's that.
We do, yeah. No.
Yeah. Whoever's in charge of your police and all that.
In the same vein, smart working in Italian is the term for remote work, which, hey, as someone who works from home, I'm into that.
These are all quite new concepts. So it's sort of okay that these terms are not the same everywhere because we're coining them at the same time. But it's interesting that they're choosing to use English units to build up these words.
I'm sure it's that English was steering corporate culture, at least for a while there, and maybe still is.
Can I finish on a blue note with a few rude terms, as in terms that are not rude in other languages?
As if you have to ask.
Playing into your hands here. I'm still not over the handy thing. I feel like I'm still residually blushing. So the German for fat is dick, right? It's a relation of our word thick. As I said earlier, if the other Germanic languages are using a D, we're using a th sometimes. So the same happens with dick and thick. And so the German word for buttermilk, which they consider to be fatty milk, is dick milk.
Ooh, that's fun. And actually, fat is a word in lots of languages, and in Nordic languages like Norwegian and Swedish, it means a plate or a saucer or a barrel, and it's related to the English word vat. In Albanian Catalan, it means luck and chance and fate and destiny, and it's related to the word fate. And then in Cantonese, it means to show or exhibit, and it's not related to any of these.
So just that three-letter triad of F-A-T
comes around a lot.
Meanings. That's interesting. Yeah, it's quite forceful sound as well, isn't it? Fat. Nice start. Nice finish. So the Swedish for the end of something is slut, right? Which means sort of the, I think it's related to words like sluice. So if you get off the last stop on the bus, you get off at the Slutstation.
The slut
the
station.
Slut station. Exactly how it's
written. That's fabulous. Yeah. Did you know that, did we talk before about the fact that sluttish was originally used for like slovenly men before it was applied to like loose women?
Yeah, we did talk about it. And the revelation there particularly was that it was applied to men, not women, because there are still some archaic people, particularly like in the halls of power here. I remember a conservative member of parliament saying this just a few years ago. They described a woman as slutty, and what they meant was that she was untidy.
Oh no.
But just amazingly out of touch.
Oof. Right?
One, don't say it anyway. Right. Two, maybe be aware that that's even worse now than it was then. Well, it's not a nice thing to describe anyone as. Cumbang, there you go. That's a Malay word meaning a species of beetle, according to an article by Babbel, who have sponsored this video, but actually I just came across it organically. Words that sound dirty, it's there. And the Danish for dune is klit.
That's amazing. I have no additional thoughts. That's great.
Similarities.
There are definitely plenty of English words that have also been overtaken by sexual meanings too, like ejaculate within Victorian society meant to exclaim suddenly, which makes novels a little awkward sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really hard to talk about an erection, right? Mm-hmm. Which could just be a building.
Yeah.
And it not seem it's about something else.
Exactly. Intercourse is dialogue, also other things.
this is another episode for us, Jess. This is not this one. I've enjoyed this an awful lot. There was a very specific low point for me, but other than that, I've enjoyed this an awful lot.
This has been a fruitful intercourse with pregnant with information.
Oh, Jess, I should plug something. I shouldn't miss the opportunity to do this. Yeah, you did a little clap because I have mentioned for this thing on a few other platforms. But I am taking my Wordy Nerdy live show to the Edinburgh Fringe this year. Yeah, I'm going to be doing 10 nights in a row between the 6th and the 16th of August, 10 past 8 in the evening, which is a lovely slot. Please do come and see it if you're around, and we'll spend an hour together revolutionizing the English language. I'll leave a link to tickets below.
Don't miss it. It's a great show.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks for coming to the last one.
It was so much
both
fun.
Both of them. anything you'd like to plug, Jess?
Sure. I have a couple books coming out this year. One is a miscellany of weird and wonderful facts for curious humans who have nothing better to do than read You Know Who You Are. Yes, that is the title. No, I didn't come up with it. And the other one is called Into the Words, an etymologist's field guide to plants, animals, and nature, which we'll talk a little bit more about later this season.
I'm super excited about that one, actually. Oh, super. That's a very sort of European word.
Super.
Yes, using super instead of very. Yeah, that's something I've picked up since I moved to Germany. Thanks for joining us for another fun Words Unraveled.
Have a great one. We'll see you. Have a good one. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.